or volunteers. Thank you so much for choosing to listen to us in a crowded media landscape. Support for The Herb Doctor comes from Tony Jones, who provides Niazii Healing, a hands-on healing philosophy where together Tony and her client can explore old patterns and beliefs that no longer serve. Once empowered with new perspectives, different choices can be made, moving towards a life that's truly desired. Contact Tony Jones at 707-223-2724 for further information or to schedule an appointment. Support for KMUD comes from Redwood Coast Energy Authority, who provides services and support to the community to build energy resilience, reduce energy consumption, and expand the use of climate-friendly electric vehicles. Visit redwoodenergy.org for complete details or call 707-269-1700 for more information.
Okay, well, welcome to this month's edition of Ask Your Herb Doctor. It's March the 18th, 2022. Excuse a few technical hitches we had there, but we are live now. You're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM. From 7:30 till the end of the show at 8 o'clock, callers are invited to call in with questions related to this month's continuing topic of mTOR and a further discussion of holistic versus mechanistic approaches to the treatment of disease. So I think without further ado, let's introduce Dr. Raymond Pete, who once again is joining us. Dr. Pete, are you with us?
Yes, hi.
Well, thank you as always for giving your time. And as always, I'm constantly reminded of people who have never heard of alternatives. And I'm not joking, I'm serious. And I guess I just cannot take it for granted, and I'm sure you don't take it for granted either, that some people just don't know that there are alternatives to the standard model. Now, whether it's treatment or chemicals or whatever it is, but alternatives exist. And so for those people who are listening, both now and who will pick this up on the audio archives at some point in the future, would you just give an outline of your academic and professional background so people that are listening can hear about you?
Before I studied biology in graduate school, I was studying linguistics, literature, psychology, and teaching in those areas. And I decided I needed more technical science background to understand how the brain works in the humanities and language and so on. So I, in 1968, went to graduate school at University of Oregon in biology and did my dissertation, finished in 1972, and in the area of reproductive physiological aging, the changes of oxidative metabolism during aging and its effect on reproduction. And I've been applying insights and related things to all sorts of problems in the 50 years since then.
All right, well, thank you. Thank you for that. So for those of you who are listening now, we take callers from 7:30 till the end of the show, 8 o'clock. The number is 707-923-3911. Once again, 707-923-3911. So, Dr. P, I think what I'd like to do, you're exquisitely aware of this, no doubt, but just for those who are listening tonight, and like I said, who will listen to the archives, I wanted to carry on last month's topic of the findings around research, of which there's lots of papers written in 2022, 21, and 2020, based on the concept of mTOR, the mechanistic target of rapamycin, and its use in cancer. And I think the bulk of the evening show is going to remain based on the alternative approaches to cancer. What we do here is we like to give the scientific background for the relevance of certain substances, whether natural or synthetic even, used to be a better approach to treatment of disease. What I wanted to ask you, Dr. P, just to give an outline yourself even, on how the alternatives have been usurped in many ways by the modern approach to disease, and how the machinery which drives that research, if it is true research at all, is corrupted by the interests, the financial invested interests, because we really haven't made hardly any significant increases in our knowledge of the treatment of cancer in particular. So with tonight's discussion, a continuation of last month's and previous other shows based on alternatives, would you just give an outline of the kind of prior history of those thinkers like St. Georgi and numerous others you've discussed just ad lib in describing other processes that we've just used for a radio show topic in the past, how the thinking of these kind of classical people that are steeped in biology and not in mechanistic approaches, how that's changed, and what we are currently faced with in medicine, which doesn't seek to treat people holistically, let alone scientifically in some cases.
Mechanistic materialist view, reducing everything to a cause and effect relation between two simple bits of matter, that makes everything seem absolutely clear to the people who have defined science that way. But when you focus on the interaction of two or just a few particles, you can understand those very clearly. But when you're focused that way, you miss the whole context. The people like Warburg and St. Georgi looked at the whole picture of biology. Warburg saw things that happened in yeast, saw them happening in cancer, production of lactate, lactic acid, even in the presence of oxygen. and had the insight that this is something very important about the nature of life. St. Georgi was following up on some other insights by other people, such as W.F. Koch, and worked out the classical present view of how oxidation and mitochondrial metabolism work. But he kept in mind the whole organism and what's going on at every level of water and energy supply interactions and so on, every conceivable thing that feeds into the life process, and didn't focus on the few reductionistic material interactions that ordinary science does. And as a result, Warburg's work was ridiculed and ignored for about 50 years, more than 50 years. It was only around the beginning of this century that things he did in the 1920s started to be appreciated, but generally misunderstood. And St. George's work on cancer involved things that biologists and doctors had never heard of or even thought of or even could think of. The idea of what electrons in water are doing and how motion is the essential feature of life, and it's powered by the organized flow of electrons. And he applied that to cancer as well as muscle function and circulation. Every aspect of biology can be re-understood in terms of very simple things that act everywhere. There's no single place in metabolism where electrons and water and muscles react to produce motion. It's a fundamental quality of life. So the really scientific work done attempting to understand the organism in terms of everything that can be known about it scientifically, the mainline science people are blind to that because it doesn't at all fit into reductionistic materialism or mechanistic materialism.
Okay, I think the concept of looking for a cause and an effect and driving that kind of mechanistic approach has largely ignored the concept, if you like, of a living organism interacting with its environment and being affected directly by its environment. In looking at your newsletter that you publish quarterly now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You mentioned the presence and the absolute knowledge of the cancer field as a theory, but as a reality. I think for people that are listening, just to understand that not only the concept of the bystander effect exists, whereby if a cell is irradiated outside of the body and is introduced into the body, that it can have a similarly damaging effect, not because it's typically releasing high energy electrons, but because the stress signals that the cell will give out as a result of being irradiated have a direct effect on other cells it comes into, either into direct contact with or at a distance. And that is a reality. It's almost like a quantum physical event that I think only probably with the last 10 or 15 years of science opening up quantum theory. Are we able to put it into that place where we can begin to imagine such a thing as actually happening?
If people were demonstrating the phenomenon 60 years ago, they knew that if you x-rayed an animal, you didn't have to x-ray the brain and pituitary to cause generalized hormonal changes. For example, it would cause the animal to go into heat, the females. If you irradiated their foot, the same thing would happen. The whole organism would shift its hormonal balance towards reproductive heat. That is an example of the whole body as a cancer field. Signal from the radiation is a holistic stress on your whole organism that spreads something that promotes cancer. Mainstream biologists and medical people are still insisting that radiation causes a spot damage to the DNA, causes a mutation in one gene of the DNA, and that mechanistic one-to-one damage somehow works its way out, ending up as a cancer. But that simply isn't a realistic picture. The radiation doesn't have to hit the DNA. It does something excitatory and pro-inflammatory to the organism, separate from anything it might do to the DNA. And that general stress reaction to radiation turns on these signals that transmit estrogen-like signals all through the body. Mm-hmm. People have found out that you can treat radiation poisoning and estrogen poisoning in the same way. And if you add radiation to estrogen, you've had an additive effect of the damage.
I also...
Sorry, can I interrupt for a moment?
Yeah.
So, Dr. Pete, this is why you're strongly recommend against any form of radiation, but specifically dental x-rays, because x-rays damage fastly dividing cells. And when you have a dental x-ray, it's affecting your brain, which is very rapidly dividing, your eyes, and your thyroid.
And tongue cancer, tonsil cancer, eye cancer, and brain cancer have all increased along with the incidence or intensity of dental x-rays. A study in Seattle several years ago put a lead shield over the abdomen of pregnant women and found that a full set of dental x-rays with the thyroid and the pelvis and everything shielded by lead caused, if they were pregnant at the time, it caused the babies to be born underweight, underdeveloped, the same way any stress or excess estrogen would do.
So the stress of that dental x-ray spread all the way down to the uterus and the developing baby.
Yep, everything in the body.
I wanted to just briefly get into the term cancer field before we both open up the lines at 7:30 and get into the subject of mTOR and phosphoinositide 3 kinase, as well as AKT, as a triple pathway with which cancer is now being studied, and a lot of natural products with these blocking activities are being trialed and used and have already in phase 2 trials for cancer, very many different cancers. But I wanted just to, for people that are listening, we talked about the bystander effect and how just the fact that you can damage a cell and reintroduce it into the body, it can still cause damage in the body it's been introduced into, not because the body's been damaged, but the cell has an alarm signal that is basically propagated throughout the organism and has a bystander effect on other healthy cells. Well, the same thing with the cancer field. You wrote in your January newsletter that the cancer field is very similarly set up in such that the actual tumor itself, in a radiating pattern out from the tumor, has differing degrees of damage to the cells. So essentially, there's a radiating pattern of damage from the central tumor out to distant tissues beyond the tumor that are precancerous, and that is propagated by a direct pathway that is similar to the bystander effect.
Any of the intense stresses, like oxygen or glucose deficiency, will reduce the efficient oxygen metabolism and cause stress signals. When one particular area is responding more intensely to stress, what you get is a small local version, maybe a few inches in diameter, of the organismic bystander effect. The bystander effect refers to things that are well distributed through the body, but the intense signals, such as a cell that is approaching or already turned into cancer, will chronically produce an excess of lactic acid, even when it gets oxygen. And so there will be a gradient of lactic acid surrounding that cell that irritates and disturbs the nearby cells, which then begin producing lactic acid. And that spreads maybe through a few centimeters of solid tissue. Just the local diffusion causes a visible gradient, ending up in a gradient of DNA damage and mutations. It's hard to list all of the factors other than lactic acid that are diffusing out of an injured cell. They include carbon monoxide, nitric oxide, inflammatory cytokines, a variety of those. Everything that the body uses to respond protectively to damage, it can help local tissues multiply faster so that they can fill in a wound, for example, accelerates the movement and replication of cells, so that it's an essential part of healing a wound. But when it's coming, being originated from a mutated or seriously damaged group of cells, then it's tending to simply spread the damage rather than accelerate the healing. So all of these are normal healing factors, like activating the local production of estrogen. That's a normal part of repairing tissue damage. But when it is prolonged and something causes the body to be unable to turn it off, then each of these things adds to the spreading effect. As far as it diffuses locally, you'll see this gradient of deterioration, including mutations. And meanwhile, it's having its adding a burden to the whole organism with the more like the radiation bystander effect.
Okay, you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor, KMED Galbaville, 91.1 FM from 7:30 till the end of the show, 8 o'clock. You're invited to call in. The number is 707-923-3911. Once again, 707-923-3911. Dr. Raymond Pete joining us. So before, I guess, we get into the continued dialogue about mTOR and its importance as a target for the treatment of cancer, I just wanted to outline this differentiation that I started with the show with, in terms of mechanistic versus holistic approach to treatment. I read an article in preparing for this, which was pretty exhaustive and had a lot of good reference material in it in its own right, as well as lots of natural and alternative inhibitors, as well as synthetic inhibitors, of course, you know, because it was a kind of a chemical journal article. But basically, they discussed the phosphoinositide 3-phosphate AKT mTOR pathway as a kind of three-branched signaling pathway, and were discussing that, saying essentially approximately 70% of ovarian and breast cancers are activated by a derangement in this pathway, and then also saying that about 90% of lung adenocarcinomas show an aberrant activation of this pathway, and then 40% or so of squamous cell carcinomas are activated by this pathway. And last month we talked about mTOR for the first time, and you had mentioned mTOR1 and mTOR2 as being subsets of mTOR, and we kind of came up with the etiology of mTOR and its discovery and its reference to rapamycin, and how that was discovered to be a good novel treatment to block this inflammatory pathway of which cancer uses. So would you just outline briefly again the mTOR1 and mTOR2?
The one form is an activating phosphorylating enzyme that it's when you're normally fed and growing up, it's what mediates between eating more and growing more. And if you overeat at any time, you tend to overproduce this growth factor that necessarily leads to the degenerative diseases. Excess calorie intake is very important. And the activation of a cell will turn on mTOR and synthesis and growth such that intracellular calcium, which calcium should mostly be outside the cells, but inside the cell it's an activating factor that increases mTOR. The two form of the enzyme does similar things, but it's fairly insensitive to the usual signals, such as overeating, but depends mostly on growth hormone. And many kinds of stress will turn on an excess of growth hormone. Women have spectacularly high levels of growth hormone compared to men, as a result of estrogen's stress-inducing effect. So the growth hormone has some particular ways of affecting our handling of fat. But that's basically the way the mTOR2 is turned on, through high growth hormone.
And these growth hormones in their own right are proliferative agents that would promote cancer growth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So the when I read about this mTOR PI3K, for want of a shorter term for it, and AKT pathways, it looked like it wasn't just about mTOR that we had discussed last month, but that these other two arms of the same signaling messenger system the phosphoinositide and the AKT pathway were also very good targets for shutting down, essentially, the... And it almost seemed like it was shutting down the energy pathway, which I found a little hard to reconcile with, given that thyroid hormone and progesterone being anti-inflammatory and energy conservative mechanisms were concerned, that the kind of energy production side of things was something to be almost turned off in terms of having a beneficial effect on slowing cancers down. And perhaps this is the same mechanism by which the calorie control or calorie restriction producing a greater longevity in people is you know is achieved.
Yeah, the overeating and mTOR and so on tend to favor the oxidation of fats over glucose, and when that happens, you're basically slowing down the constructive part of energy metabolism and shifting over towards some of these risky simple growth pathways.
So what do you think about shutting down not just mTOR, but these other two pathways that are linked as a kind of three-branched target? I mean, it's not in the mechanistic terms, which is what the subject was about, in terms of being holistic, because it's not looking for a sidal killing effect. It's looking, and a lot of the things that were listed were flavonoids, and these were biologically active molecules found in fruits and vegetables, of which the kind of, you know, five servings of fruit and vegetables a day eater is based on in terms of good health, and not just from a vitamin C perspective, but the antioxidant flavonoids. Whether or not, because I was looking for mTOR inhibitors, and it seemed, as I'd mentioned, I think last month, that there's things like resveratrol from the polygonum, one of those, you know, the really massive polygonums that kind of take over everything if you're not careful, if you plant them, based in Japan. I think also China is fairly endemic with it. But they come from, you know, grape skins is one of the main sources of resveratrol. And then the berries, things like blueberries and bilberries and cranberries, and I know oranges and other citrus fruits contain these flavonoids. And then I saw two other herbs, and they caught my attention. One was a Chinese herb, platycodon grandiflorus, which contain this compound called platycodon D. And then another Chinese herb, magnolia grandiflora, containing a product called honokoi. And they were using those as both AKT blocking and mTOR inactivating substances, along with all the synthetic substances that they listed, and two or three of which were kind of often repeated. But in terms of the energy quenching activity of flavonoids, in terms of free radical liberation, so when people use flavonoids, if they've got an inflammatory disorder that's kind of systemic and widespread, how these antioxidants, for want of a better word, can quench the free radical generating effect of inflammation, or that inflammation has, how this can be part and parcel of a anti-cancer approach, a holistic anti-cancer approach, rather than mechanistically poisoning the cancer cell, which I think a lot of chemo, well, definitely radiotherapy does, but I think a lot of chemotherapy in the past especially has targeted cancer cells in a killing way. Well, what do you think about the, as I know you use CO2 promotion, you know, generating higher than regular physiological levels of CO2 as being protective, and then obviously the other protective molecules like progesterone and aspirin and other compounds that would increase your CO2. What do you think about those things that I've mentioned, then the flavonoids and or the other substances that have this energetic
They do directly quench the free radicals and are protective that way. But I think their more basic effect is that they intensify the cell's normal cytochrome oxidase-based oxidation by speeding up the energy-producing oxidation through the electron transport chain. That process prevents and reduces or prevents the random oxidation that creates free radical damage. And so it's a lot more general and fundamental to intensify respiratory energy than to try to use the antioxidant function. If you think in terms of antioxidants, it can go wrong because cancer is better than anything at creating antioxidant effects. Part of their wildness is their ability to defend themselves against free radical damage. Chemotherapy and radiation are intended to kill cancer cells by way of the free radical damage, but they have an antioxidant system that uses high production of electrons. Basically, the excess of lactic acid causes an excess of electrons that will end the cycle or quench the free radicals. But meanwhile, they're failing to activate normal energy-producing oxidation.
So you were talking earlier, if you got dental x-rays or other x-rays, that it affected stuff near it. If you were going to be exposed to x-rays, what sorts of foods or other things would you want to do to help protect yourself?
Things such as thyroid, magnesium, and progesterone, which promote the production of carbon dioxide rather than lactic acid, and then all of these other protective things, the flavonoids caffeine, aspirin, and so on.
I think basically, Dr. P, is what it sounds like you and Andrew are describing is cancer involves a lot of inflammation, and a lot of these compounds are acting as anti-inflammatories and increasing normal cellular respiration.
That's really a secret of thyroid function. It's anti-inflammatory by directing oxygen towards consuming these electrons that would otherwise cause inflammation.
Because when the body's inflamed, then it results in a lactic acid respiration, which is very damaging and inflammatory.
And increases the loose electrons that are susceptible to random oxidation.
Right.
Okay, you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor, KMUD Galbraith, 91.1 FM. From now until the end of the show, 8 o'clock, you're invited to call in. And number 707-923-3911. So in terms of the use of agents that would block mTOR or block either the phosphoinositol 3 phosphate or the AKT pathway, do you think there's any, because I also saw when I was looking at this that they've come up with second generation mTOR inhibitors. I know that they talked about the first, I think you mentioned them last month, Sirolimus, Temsirolimus, and Everolimus as being analogs here. But they also talked about these second-generation inhibitors, they're calling them ATP-competitive mTOR kinase inhibitors, such as taurine-1 and taurine-2. Do you think these molecules that compete with ATP, the kind of energy currency of the cell. Do you think these have some mileage and value in terms of? Because what I have trouble with is conceptualizing interfering with energy production.
That doesn't sound like it will end well.
Yeah.
The essential thing you need is to stabilize the cell.
Right, because you're always mentioning sugar being very important and not to starve someone from sugar, not just for diabetes, but that's when you first mentioned it, but for cancer, and it's not at all scientifically rationalized that is a good way to go about.
Yeah, because the starving cancer emits signals that tell the body to convert its own tissues, muscles, skin, nerves, to glucose, to amino acids, which can be turned into glucose. So when you starve a cancer cell, it tells the body to start breaking itself down to provide the food it wants.
And then they also went on to discuss enduring cancer metabolism is strongly, or at least the angiogenesis of cancer, the creation of novel vessels to bring blood and nutrients, etc., to the cancer, which is in a kind of heightened state, that we've mentioned this before, the hypoxia-inducible factor, the activation of that was very responsible for driving and promoting cancer, and how things like vascular endothelial growth factor are other substances which drive cancer's production. So blocking hypoxia-inducible factor is something that I know you've talked about in the past when we've done shows similar to this.
And that tends to go with activating carbonic anhydrase, which is the cell's way of disposing of acidic carbon dioxide. But when that is too active, it causes the cell to become alkaline, leading to the production of lactic acid. That's very central to the cancer metabolism, is to create alkalinity inside the cell by activating the enzyme that converts carbon dioxide from its acidic form to the carbonic acid form.
Okay, so for those who are listening, I wanted to run through some other natural mTOR inhibitors, and I think I mentioned last month turmeric. Turmeric's getting a lot of press for its anti-rheumatic, anti-inflammatory effects, for its anti-cancer effects, and probably gets its anti-cancer kudos from being a natural mTOR inhibitor. And then resveratrol, mentioned that, from Polygonum cuspidatum. And then a compound whose abbreviation is EGCG, epigallocatechin gallate, from green tea, as well as diethyl methane and caffeine. I was pleased to see caffeine there, saying that this may inhibit mTOR signaling directly and indirectly. And then I saw two other substances here that caught my attention, and one was a substance called shogal from ginger root, and there was an article reference saying it inhibited the PI3K AKT mTOR pathway by directly targeting AKT1 and AKT2, but not the PI3K or the mTOR pathway. So ginger was used there specifically for colon cancer. And then I know you're not into the kind of pre-diabetes treating drugs, but metformin. Do you have any good things to say about metformin? Because metformin was actually listed as one of those things to inhibit mTOR.
Yeah, but the only drawback is that it acts to inhibit part of the electron transport chain. So it's impairing the mitochondria while also doing the beneficial thing of turning off mTOR. So it's good to be cautious about metformin, because there's not enough known about it, but still its effects are generally protective through inhibiting mTOR.
Yeah. Okay. And then do you think there's much value in using some of these substances as a potential treatment for Alzheimer's? And I saw other references for neurovegetative disorders, and then I think that there may have been a Parkinson indication because of the amyloid beta that was quote-unquote treated or decreased, and the neurofibrillary tangles that could be mitigated by using some of these substances because of their effect on mTOR and mTOR's kind of downstream effects on amyloid production.
Inflammation is involved in all of the degenerative processes, and so the anti-inflammatory, anti-mTOR things are turning out to be protective against obesity, Alzheimer's, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, anything you can think of turns out to involve inflammation at its root.
Okay, let me give out the number. We do have a caller, but if people would like to call in, it's 707-923-3911. Dr. Raymond Peet with us. So, caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? What's your question?
Hello, Andrew and Sarah. This is Margaret, and Dr. Peet, I'm grateful for your show. I'm from Garberville, and your mention of turmeric caught me because I use turmeric in daily, pretty much. But I know that there's a tendency in our society to find something like turmeric or other extractives from other herbs and things, and it's like, oh, this is so great, I'm going to put it in capsules and take, you know, like right. 5 millimeters of it every day, or 5 centimeters, or not centimeters, but you know, milligrams. And I was wondering if you would address whether that's really beneficial, or if it's beneficial enough to take it in your ordinary diet, you know, just as it comes, kind of. Do we have to really sock it to our bodies with all of these extracts and pills and things, you know?
I think,
is that clear? The question?
I think you can overeat on the so-called protective things.
Uh-huh.
Same with vitamin C. Instead of being antioxidant, it becomes pro-oxidant when it begins producing excess electrons in cells.
Uh-huh. And what about the other lesser, like turmeric comes to mind because I do use that. I know people that take it in little capsules every day, and it seems excessive to me, but I'm not sure. Is it beneficial at that level, or what?
I think some of this comes from studying populations in countries that use it in their cuisine. So whether the Indian subcontinent, where they use, or the Asian subcontinent, you know, where they use a lot of turmeric and or ginger and these other substances is concerned, I think they have fairly low incidences of colorectal cancer. And I think they've kind of put the two and two together when they looked at turmeric and its anti-inflammatory activity, as positing that as a potential mechanism by which they've, you know, have fairly low incidences.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, they use it as a matter of course in their daily lives. We tend to say, this is great, I'm going to load myself up with it. And I'm just thinking that maybe that's not as beneficial as we think it might be. Maybe we should just follow that pattern and use it in a more integrative part kind of way, you know.
More in a culinary fashion.
Yes, thanks, Sarah.
Yeah,
so that we're eating our medicine instead of taking capsules.
Yeah, yeah.
To remember, too, is a lot of traditional cultures make teas out of these things. They're
mm-hmm.
not just like, you know, swallowing tablespoons of turmeric root. They're putting some in their cooking, and if they're going to make it into a medicine, they make it into a tea, which helps to extract the medicinal constituents like a tincture does without having to have all the extra fiber and potential extra heavy metals that are in herbs that don't get extracted in the tea and the tincture.
Yeah, that's, mm-hmm.
like they would in the root of turmeric.
That's a very good point, because having looked at these botanicals and put them through ICP-MS to see what levels of kind of the California 4, heavy metals, arsenic, cadmium, lead, and mercury are within these herbs as part of a GMP process to produce these extracts and sell them, I know from data, raw data, that the plant itself, the root, contains very high levels in some cases of those compounds, and the extracts contain virtually none. And so the extract process, I would say this much, is very clean compared to the root of the actual herb if you were going to consume this. And so we've done shows on this with fish in the ocean and showing how much arsenic, cadmium, lead, mercury is in them. The same goes for any plant material that you would use that was basically to ingest it in the powder or capsule form, which is why we're not at all in agreement with capsules and powders over extracts, because extracts do not bring out the heavy metal content of the raw material. It's as simple as that. I can show you.
And also extract tinctures that concentrate the material.
you concentrate
the medicinal constituents.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, okay. Margaret, for your call.
Okay.
I think we have another caller on the line, so let's take this next caller. Call away from, what's your question?
Hi, my name is Margie, and I would like a clarification on when Dr. Pete says sugar. Does that mean just fructose or honey, natural sugars?
Yeah.
And I can take my answer off the air.
Incidentally, where are you from?
I'm from Pepperwood.
Pepperwood, okay. So, yeah, you know, you kind of read my mind there. I was going to say that, and I wasn't going to be devil's advocate, but it sounded like I was going to be, a moment ago, in going to answer the previous caller's questions. I was going to say, what about sugar? Do we just want to get that from carbohydrates, or do we want to get it from sugar or honey? Because I think Dr. Pete would say to get it from honey and to get it from sugar. But, yeah, Dr. Pete.
It's also good coming from starch or other more complex
healthy starches,
carbohydrates, but the problem is some of those, like sweet potatoes, are such mixtures. They have woody material and fats, indigestible things mixed in with the otherwise useful carbohydrates. So you can't just say that any old starch is going to be equivalent to glucose or sucrose or honey. It depends on whether it's digestible.
Well, I think I want to. Can I go back to the sugar issue and the cancer issue that you touched on earlier? Every cell in the body needs glucose to operate. So if you don't eat any kind of sugar, your body's going to turn on a harmful metabolism to make sugar, and that is involving lactic acid, correct, Dr. Pete?
And high cortisol is necessary to mobilize and break down the protein to make amino acids and glucose.
Which also promotes cancer. Cortisol also promotes cancer. It's a stress promoter.
Weakens your immunity against it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lowers your immune system. Like everybody knows, steroids suppress the immune system. And cortisol is a natural steroid your body will make when you starve your body of sugar, glucose. So I know, Dr. Pete, you've said that honey and white sugar, cane sugar, are identical in their structure. They both are sucrose, which is half fructose and half glucose.
And the pure fructose on the market, for many people it has allergenic effects because of it's manufactured in a more complex way than with sucrose. You simply concentrate the juice and remove the impurities from the cane juice to make white sucrose. But to make fructose, chemical and enzyme processes are used that introduce some trace allergens. So you have to be cautious about using what they call a powdered fructose.
Right, so you would recommend honey or cane sugar over a fructose because of the process that the fructose goes through, even though fructose is more nutritious sugar.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is I know, Dr. Wheat, you don't recommend people just eat white sugar by the tablespoon without balancing it with a healthy fat, healthy saturated fat like coconut oil and or butter and a protein.
Yeah, you can,
or at least with just a protein so that it's not just an instant sugar spike.
It can be used in a pure form, for example, as a mild analgesic for babies. They give them a bit of pure sucrose and it's sort of a painkiller. And in areas that lack penicillin, a big wound that otherwise would be fatal has been packed with pure store-bought white sugar, and it has a germicidal effect as well as a protective effect. So,
well, also honey does too. They pack wounds with honey as well.
Yeah, so it has its specific therapeutic effects besides its protective nutritional effects.
Right. So I hope that answered that caller's question there.
Okay, good. I think there was a caller that came in, but it is 4 minutes to. I don't think we can do it. It's almost 3 minutes to the hour.
One thing I wanted to mention before we're finished is that vitamin D is a very important inhibitor of mTOR because it works on many other levels. It inhibits things that would promote mTOR, reduces the processes that would amplify a little inflammation into a big inflammation, such as blocking prostaglandin formation.
Okay, excellent. So, Dr. P, I do appreciate you joining us again on the show, and I'll give out your information, and thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. P.
Okay, so for those who've listened to this March 18th, 2022 edition of Ask Your Herb Doctor,
Something just happened. Try saying what you just said again, Andrew. I hung up and everything cut out on the board. Can you hear me? Okay, we hear. Try the other mic. Oh no. Well, I hate to have a rough ending to that, but something weird just happened on the K-Mud Ancient board here, and I'm going to have to fill out a technical malfunction thing, and please support Redwood Community Radio, because we really, really, really do need a new board. Thank you so much for joining us. It's time to step out on a wing and a prayer.
Welcome to the top of the day. Oh, here we are. We're both off.
I made it. Yeah.
You made it. All right. Have you found the microphone?
Yeah, I see it over here.
All right. All right. We're in the vicinity.
Well, hello, Chaka.
Hey there, Mom.
Fancy meeting you here.
Yeah. What a coincidence. Here's a little card I found. Mind reads that this program is supported by the Redwood Palace, a full-service restaurant that offers a relaxed dining experience on the Avenue of the Giants. offering a full selection of local beer and wine, Humboldt Bay oysters, cheese, charcuterie boards, and special dinners. The Redwood Palace is located in Miranda and can be reached at 707-223-5749. Menu and more online at redwoodpalacemiranda.com. To go and dining in from Wednesday through Saturday, 5 to 9 p.m. Oh, by the way...